Yeah. Leave substantial time for questions. So there is still some things that we need to read in connection to this theme, and we'll speak briefly on the topics, and then hopefully we'll leave time for questions. But to give a brief summary, we are speaking about patience, and according to Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he gave his definition of patience, and he says that in the first verse of Upadeshamrita, the symptoms of patience are explained. These are the symptoms of patience. Vacho vegam, manasakura vegam, jiva vegam, udara pasta vegam, itan vegan yo vishaheta dhira sarvam apimam pritivim sasishat. That a person, sober person who can tolerate the urge to speak, the mind's demands, the actions of anger, and the urges of the tongue, belly, and genitals, is qualified to make disciples all over the world. The Didi doors open again at what time? 8:45? 8:50. Okay. And we've only been discussing one of the six urges, which is tolerating the urge to speak. We can speak about the others, but we're going to stick with this topic, tolerating the urge to speak. Because Srila Prabhupada used to emphasize the point that if we can learn to control the tongue, beginning with the tongue, then automatically others will follow. Because the tongue is the most voracious and difficult to control. Of course, generally when we think about the veracity of the tongue. We think about things that we eat. But as we know, that tongue control of the tongue includes also the things that we speak. And I hope for those who have been here for the last two nights, that emphasis has been made clear that there are certain urges of the tongue beyond just the things that we eat. And those urges are specifically the tendency to speak about topics which have no connection with Krishna. Now, that in itself is a very broad subject. There are many classifications of topics that have no connection with Krishna, such as useless debate and many other things that are also described elsewhere in Sri Bhakti Loka. And we're not even covering those topics. We're focusing specifically on tolerating the urge to speak, as we oftentimes may find ourselves speaking about others, and the dangers of unnecessarily speaking about others, as defined by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. When that is not controlled, he says that what happens? One thing that happens. What arises? When enmity. Yes, enmity. Enmity arises. If we cannot. And we also explained a very important point, that for sadhakas, those who are pursuing the goal of trying to awaken Krishna's pleasure, it is very important to create a healthy atmosphere for loving exchanges. And elsewhere in Sri Bhakti Loka, Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur quotes Srila Rupa Goswami's well-known verse, the Dati Pratigrinati Guyamakyati Pritchati, explaining that loving exchanges between devotees is on the basis of giving gifts, accepting gifts, giving prasadam, accepting prasadam, and revealing one's mind in confidence and inquiring confidentially. And he emphasizes the point, when these exchanges are done with affection and love, that is the essence of meaningful relationships between devotees, that the affection is there, and love, and the symptoms of love, which is a very broad topic, but as we know, Rupa Goswami has defined that some of the symptoms of love are that it's given without any motive, right? It's meant to please the person, please the object of our affection exclusively, and it's freed from the desires for fruitive gain or from jnana or liberation. So a symptom of loving exchanges is that one of the most important symptoms of loving exchanges is to reveal one's mind in confidence and inquire confidentially. And as we said, that Vaishnava atmosphere is very conducive for such loving exchanges when it's freed from this element of unnecessarily speaking about others. Because if that tendency is not controlled, the consequences can be very severe. That is that we can't speak confidentially, we can't open our hearts. Because there's always that hidden fear or mistrust that if I say something very confidential, how do I know it's not going to go around and come back? And when we see that that's the tendency, that we see that cases happened with other people, with other devotees, that something they told in confidence came back to them, then it breaks down trust and we become fearful of having confidential relationships, which is the very foundation of loving exchanges between Vaishnavas. So, as we can see, that in a society of Vaishnavas, this is a very important principle of tolerating the urge to speak specifically, unnecessarily, about others. And we've covered that quite, I think, I can't say exhaustively. We could bring up many more things, but we only have tonight because this is the last night. But we've given various examples not only examples, but reasons behind such unnecessary talk about others, and we've covered them and by discussing specifically envy. And it's interesting to note that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur concludes this topic by emphasizing, he says something very, very important. I'll read it now, but we'll come back to it again when we conclude the topic, just to hint where everything is going to end on this topic tonight. And he concludes this topic by saying, those who talk about others while influenced by devotional impediments like envy, hatred, pride, or distinction are offenders at the feet of Bhakti Devi. So that's how he concludes the topic about speaking about others, with that statement, which is a very strong statement, which means that basically whatever we're going to continue to discuss tonight about valid reasons for speaking about others, they always have, this condition has to be there included, that you can do it as long as there's no envy in it, motivation of envy, pride, distinction, or hatred. As long as that's not there. So we can see it really limits us from speaking about others. Unless we've really done a very deep search within our own hearts to examine whether or not it's possible that that element may be there. And that's all the more reason to have confidential relations with devotees. Because you may see something about somebody else, and you may be inclined to say it, but somebody who looks inside his own heart, who's internal, he'll ask himself the question first, is there any pride, envy, or hatred in my assessment of this other devotee's character? And if I'm not sure, which hopefully some of us may question, then I should go to a devotee who I have a confidential relationship with and ask him, do you think that what I see in this behavior of this devotee is substantial? There's something to it? Or is it possible that you can see in my heart there's some element of pride or envy in my own heart? Help me to assess. That's the benefit of having a confidential relationship with another devotee, that before you start saying it to others in a very candid way or uncontrollable way, it's good to check. Make sure my assessment's accurate. So this all comes down to the importance of confidential relationships with devotees. So, as I said, that is the concluding words of Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur on the topic of speaking about others. So far, we've given reasons why we speak about others. One of them was because it's natural. And we spoke about that also. It's natural to speak about others, especially if the topic happens to be about Krishna. And we also said that devotees who generally speak about Krishna are so inspired by the subject matter, and those who hear about it are also so inspired by the subject matter, that they don't have to tolerate their urges to speak. And therefore, everyone benefits by such uncontrollable urges. And because the subject matter is so purifying to the heart and so satisfying to the heart. You know, Krishna himself says, Naham tishtami vaikunte yogi nam hidriyeshava tatra tishtamanara yatsa gayanti madbhakta says, "Oh Narada, I'm not in the Vaikuntha planets, nor am I in the hearts of yogis, but you'll find me in that place, wherever devotees are speaking about me." So, not only do we have the benefit of getting wonderful realizations, but we also get the opportunity to invoke Krishna's presence by such pure, unmotivated Krishna Katha. So those urges don't need to be controlled. So that is one reason, a valid reason for speaking about others, when a topic is about Krishna or Krishna's devotees. There, and generally we speak about Krishna's devotees, we're glorifying them. And as we do the Lord. And then, otherwise, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, better not to speak at all. But then we started to go through a list of valid reasons that one could speak about others, and without having it to be considered sinful. Not only is it not sinful, but it's beneficial. And we discussed that it's very valid for those in householders to speak about others, because they're forced to, because by the nature of their lifestyle, they have to maintain their family members. They have to, what were the list of things that he had given? I'll have to go through the list. Oh yes, they're earning, saving, protecting, and maintaining family. Therefore, he cannot give up completely talking about others. So yeah, so there's valid reasons, but still, a householder should be very careful to live in a very Krishna-conscious environment with his family. And if he lives in a Krishna-conscious environment with his family, then and he limits speaking about others only to that which is necessary, there's no sinful reactions. If he speaks only what is necessary to fulfill his duties as a householder. So, and then we said also that when a guru enlightens his disciples, sometimes, unless he occasionally talks about others, his instructions may not be clear. So, therefore, this is another reason that one may speak about or be willing to sit and hear. Because not only when we talk about controlling the urge to speak, if we're going to be discriminating Vaishnavas, we also have to control the urge to hear. Because sometimes, if we're not careful, we may be very eager to hear something which we may contribute to the fault by being eager to hear only those things which are not so palatable to hear. And if we have the opportunity sometimes to hear the glorification of Krishna, or in another place there are a few devotees speaking about somebody else, and we may be thinking, well, that's more interesting. So we have to discriminate. And especially if somebody is speaking unnecessarily, we can possibly even stop the whole exchange by saying, do I need to hear this? Someone may say that's contrary to social convention. Maybe. Or it may even sound as if it's proud or whatever. Sometimes devotees have a difficult time actually drawing a line. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur is suggesting, draw the line. If somebody doesn't know about this, and you do know that the topic or the subject matter is something that you can't do anything with, you can't help the person who's being talked about, have no need to hear it. So you can just stop the whole thing by saying, do I need to hear this? And let the person think for himself if he needs to say it to you or not. So this is another factor that needs to be taken into consideration. So, but when a guru enlightens his disciple about a topic, sometimes his instruction may not be clear, and therefore, as Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, the previous Mahajans have talked about others in this way, and we quoted the verses last night from Srimad Bhagavatam where he talks about envious householders. And quite direct, described the characteristic of an envious householder who's completely forgotten about what the goal of life is all about. And Shukadeva Goswami concludes the topic by saying, okay, be careful, don't fall into this trap. Now I've told you so many things that are positive that you should do. Now be careful to know what the things that you shouldn't do. And so he speaks about it in a general way. But now the next he's going to say, and this is where we left off last night. He says that, therefore such activities should be considered beneficial. And again, in order to instruct his own disciples, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu spoke about pseudo-renunciates in the following words from Chaitanya Charitamrita. So Lord Chaitanya is going to speak about somebody to his disciples. He's going to express his dissatisfaction indirectly. Well, maybe not so indirectly. He's alluding to a person, but he's not naming him. And he says here, he quotes Lord Chaitanya, The Lord replied, I cannot tolerate seeing the face of a person who has accepted the renounced order of life, but who still talks intimately with a woman. There are many persons with little in their possession who accept the renounced order of life like monkeys. They go here and there engaging in sense gratification and speaking intimately with women. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, my mind is not under my control. It does not like to see anyone in the renounced order who speaks intimately with women. Unless one speaks in this way while instructing and while concluding a subject, there is no benefit for oneself or others, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says. Therefore, when the previous acharyas have personally set example and taught others, how will we be benefited by acting contrary to their instruction? So again, when the guru is instructing his disciple, enlightening his disciple, he may speak and we may hear. And it's beneficial to hear it. Of course, generally, when the guru is instructing the disciple in a public place, he may not be so direct. It may be he's instructing a few disciples in a small assembly. And therefore, but if it was, you know, if we were to speak about publicly about somebody, I'm not sure that that's exactly what Bhaktivinoda Thakur is referring to here, a public statement. But to a group of disciples, he may do so. And then he makes another point, another valid reason. And if one discusses in this way the improper behavior current in a religious sect or amongst the general public, then such talk is not adverse to devotional service. Even if one sometimes talks about a particular person, there is no fault. Everyone, we hear this, we may think, this is the loophole we've been looking for. I knew it was there, right? We can justify, yes, if we see something that's not right. He says here, if one discusses in this way the improper behavior current in a religious sect or amongst the general public, then such talk is not adverse to devotional service. Yes, it is acceptable to do that. But please remember, my dear Prabhus, that Bhaktivinoda Thakur also concludes this topic by saying that if anyone talks about others while influenced by devotional impediments like envy, hatred, pride, or distinction, they are offenders at the feet of Bhaktideva. So it's not a free license. It's not a free license to just immediately point out defects to everyone and anyone, unless we've actually done a thorough examination of our own hearts and consultation possibly with our confidential devotees and ask them, is this a valid observation or not? But again, we also have to take into consideration that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is speaking about the guru. the guru instructing his disciples also. These points must be remembered. So he says, even if one sometimes talks about a particular person, there is no fault. And then he quotes in the Srimad Bhagavatam, Maitreya Muni, the foremost devotee, spoke about Vena Maharaj in this way, quoting from the 4th canto, 14th chapter, 29th verse. The great sage Maitreya continued, thus the king, who became unintelligent due to his sinful life and deviation from the right path, became actually bereft of all good fortune. He could not accept the requests of this great sages, which the sages put before him with great respect, and therefore he was condemned. End of quote. He was speaking about Vena Maharaj. Sri Maitreya Rishi needed to speak about others in this way. He spoke to his audience to instruct them. This is not prajalpa. The practicing devotee normally discusses ancient history and the association of devotees. Occasionally they talk about non-devotees. Such talk is always auspicious and favorable to devotional service. And then concluding, but those who talk about others while influenced by devotional impediments like envy, hatred, pride, or distinction are offenders at the feet of Bhakti Devi. Now, I think that I've sufficiently, at least, tried to cover, especially about envy and pride. In our first class, I believe, we spoke about it, the dangers of envy and pride, and how envy and pride can prompt somebody to discuss others' character in an unfavorable way. I think distinction and hatred, although they are unique, still they can easily fall into these categories of pride or hatred, because obviously we should be very careful. In Prabhupada used to, or we've oftentimes heard, I think he quoted it also, to hate the sin and not the sinner. Because a Vaishnava is supposed to be very careful, that generally we think of hatred in terms of enmity, an enemy. But according to our Vaishnava philosophy, Titikshava Karunaka, what is that verse? Titikshava Karunaka. Ajata sadhava sadhava sadhabhushanam. The symptoms of a sadhu is he is tolerant, mercy, friendly towards all living beings. He has no enemies. He's peaceful, he abides by the scriptures, and all his characteristics are sublime. So, we're all aspiring sadhus. We should have no enemies. And, we should be very careful about any feelings of hatred that we may have towards others. And we should try to see it in the spiritual way of hating the sin and not the sinner. And as we said also the other day, that if we see some behavior in a person that is inappropriate, we should always, from a preacher's point of view, from a Vaishnava's point of view, should feel compassion and try to elevate the consciousness of the person who's engaged in misbehavior by setting the proper example ourselves and by trying to see the good in them and elevating them to a higher platform in that way. Although sometimes that may be very ineffective, and if we see that a person is engaged in an activity which is harmful towards other Vaishnavas, or is attacking other Vaishnavas, then Srila Narottam Das Thakur has explained that this is a justifiable reason for becoming angry. he said that if we see another person who is envious of another Vaishnava and who mistreats another Vaishnava, then this is justifiable anger, and we can manifest our anger. He even says that's a way to dovetail our anger. As he says that lust can be dovetailed by offering the fruits of one's service to the Lord. Anger can be dovetailed by becoming angry against those who are envious and aggressive towards devotees. Greed can become dovetailed by becoming greedy to associate with those devotees who are always discussing the pastimes of the Lord, to becoming greedy for their association. Bewilderment, he says, is dovetailed by becoming bewildered because of an inability to fulfill the goal of love for the Lord. Bewilderment, mada, moha, madness, becoming mad after achieving the goal of the Lord. And of course, matsaya, envy. He says that's can't be dovetailed. You can't say, Prabhu, I'm envious of you and I'm dovetailing it in Krishna's service. And it just doesn't work. Five of them can be dovetailed, but he says matsaya can never be dovetailed. So wherever there is envy, we should try to understand that there's something in my own heart that needs work. Of course, envy exists in the spiritual world too. As we know, there are symptoms of envy. I think in the nectar devotion example is given that one time one gopi was speaking in an envious way that Krishna was painting lines in the forehead of another gopi, and because the lines were so straight, obviously he wasn't agitated by her. And Rupa Goswami said that this is a symptom of transcendental envy. And the Prabhupada explains in one letter, he says that transcendental envy means that there's never malice. Right? Material envy means that when we feel envy towards others, we feel malice towards them. And malice means we want to do harm. But on the transcendental platform, although there is envy, it's because it actually enhances the Lord's pastimes and increases the Lord's pleasure. And it is freed from malice. There's never any symptom of malice whatsoever. So, anyways, envy cannot be dovetailed. It's either transcendental, which is manifest in the eternal associates of the Lord, or it's the very root cause of our existence in the material world, and it needs to be cleansed and purified from the heart. And therefore, as we said in the first night, or second night, when Srila Prabhupada quoted the verse from the fifth canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Svastyastu Vishvasya Kala Prasidatam, he said that Kala, the envious persons, means almost everyone. So we should be very careful before thinking that I'm not in that category. And therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur concludes this statement by saying, yes, if we're going to speak about others, be careful to make sure there is no envy, hatred, pride, or distinction. Otherwise, we become offenders at the feet of Bhakti Devi. So, as I said this evening, I was going to try to conclude the topic. I didn't summarize many of the other things I spoke about in the last 2 days, but I'm thinking, or I was told, maybe, that there are a lot of questions that were generated over the last couple of days, so I thought I would leave some time, if there are any questions the devotees have from either tonight or from the last couple of days that we have spoken on this topic. Are there any questions? Okay, you raised your hand first.
Hare Krishna Maharaj. Thank you for this elaborate and inspiring sessions on patience. Maharaj, there are many times that the instances that agitate us to speak out of a sense of justification, you know.
Self-justification?
Yes, to justify ourselves. Though as a sadhaka, I should be able to see Krishna's hand in any kind of behavior or any instance that I come across. So how should I, get rid of this sense of justifying and accepting, because this starts this process of, you know, speaking more or bad, you know, the sense of justifying myself.
Yes, certainly that's a very, very strong motive, usually. Our tendency is to justify and therefore we feel there's sufficient justification to point out the fault. Is that what you're saying? In others. And generally that justification, the self-justification, comes when it's something against ourselves. And of course, it's not so easy, you know, but to see that how Krishna's hand is in it, but somehow Krishna's trying to teach us something, especially if something comes again repeatedly towards us. And I oftentimes use the example just like of Dharma the bull, when King Parikshit came before Dharma and asked who has committed this atrocity, and Dharma said that, well, if I identify the perpetrator of this, then I'm just as guilty as the perpetrator himself, basically is what he said. And therefore, I cannot identify the perpetrator. But Parikshit Maharaj can immediately recognize that you must be religiosity personified, and because it is his duty to protect religion's principles, therefore he took action, although Dharma did not point out the perpetrator. So we should always try to avoid justification by accepting that there is a reason for this. I've been telling this story. Maybe it's a personal story. I'll tell it. It's a realization I got, and I thought I'd share it with you. Because there is a verse in the Bhagavatam that I learned a long time ago, spoken by Parikshit Maharaj. Taraskrita vipalabdha kshaptakshitta hatahapi tasyakat patikurvanti tad bhakta kavayopihi. He says, devotees of the Lord are so forbearing that even if they are cheated, cursed, neglected, disturbed, insulted, or even killed, they're never inclined to avenge themselves. This is a powerful verse. If you think about it, cheated, immediately we think justified. So somebody cheated me. Well, I got a good justification there. Insulted? Well, why are you insulting me? What did I do? Disturbed, neglected. You know. But he's quoted, this verse is quoted in specifically about, excuse me, it wasn't Parikshit Maharaj, it was Shamik Rishi. About Parikshit Maharaj. Shamik Rishi became so disturbed when he found out his son Sringi had cursed Parikshit Maharaj that he was thinking that my son should be punished for unjustly cursing such a saintly person as Maharaj Parikshit. He said, the best thing is that Parikshit Maharaj, who's quite capable of doing it, would counter-curse him. And then he was thinking, yes, that's it. But then he remembered Taraskrita Vipalabdha Kshatrav Chitrahatahapi. He remembered that devotees of the Lord are so forbearing that even if they're cheated, cursed, neglected, disturbed, or even killed, they're never inclined to avenge themselves. So he realized Parikshit Maharaj will never do it. What hope do I have? So at that point he realized, he just simply prayed to the Lord, please, you decide. Parikshit Maharaj won't curse him, counter-curse him, even though he's fully capable of doing it, he won't do it. So, my personal, as I was going to say, tell a personal story, is when I learned this verse. I learned this verse almost 40 years ago. And as you can see, I know the verse quite well. I quote it a lot too. And there was a certain event in my life that prompted me to learn the verse. And I'm sure everybody at some point in their life will see that there's a similar event which may prompt them to remember that verse also. Everybody has their stories. I'll tell you mine. And it was very interesting. I don't want to make it too long because I'm just answering one question. But anyways, I'll try to... And I said I'm going to leave time for questions because I was told there's a lot of questions. So I'll try to make it short. So I'll summarize. I was brahmachari in Boston. And our temple president left. He joined Radha Damodar in 1975, I believe. Another person was sent to become the temple president. And we didn't know him so well, but we were trained to accept your temple president. And I was, at that time, I was distributing Srila Prabhupada's books. I was going out in Sankirtan every day. Actually, during those years, we distributed books approximately 8 to 10 hours a day, every day. Most of the time was 7 days a week. And on weekends, we would stay out till 2 o'clock in the morning, distribute about 14 or 16 hours. We were fanatics, excuse me. Well, that's what Prabhupada did to us. So I was working very hard, and I was a Sankirtan leader. But for some reason, unknown to me at the time, the new temple president, he kind of stepped in, took over everything, and he did things, you know, changed things and made a lot, and didn't really kind of assess the situation fully. And somehow, he didn't know, or I shouldn't say he did, he knew. He knew what I was doing. But he liked to insult me publicly. Maybe he didn't like it. In fact, in the beginning, I used to think that he was training me up for bigger responsibilities. And I just accepted it. Maybe he's trying to train me up for bigger responsibilities. So I kept quiet about it. I never said anything. But at some point, when I would see it was repeated, it was becoming very difficult and almost intolerable. But I would never say anything to anybody about it. I just kept it in my heart and just prayed, you know, somehow, please let me get through this. And then one time, I was asked, I had come back from traveling Sankirtan. And I was in the temple and the president wasn't there, and I was in the temple the whole week. And for some reason, I was asked to give Srimad Bhagavatam class 3 days that week. And for some reason, although I know what the reason is, the exact verses I had to give Srimad Bhagavatam class on were fifth canto, Jad Bharata, being insulted by Maharaj Rahugana. Exact verses. I didn't pick them. Nobody else picked them. Those were the verses. And my heart at that time was like, I tell you, I was very difficult. I was being tormented. But he wasn't there. The president wasn't there, and I was giving class. And oftentimes when you're preaching to yourself just as much as you're preaching to everyone else. So I was giving class on this verse. And the first day was kind of a struggle. I tried to do it, get through it. And then I remember the second day I was giving class, I started getting all these realizations. And it was almost like, yes. Because Maharaj Rahugan was saying, Jad Bharata was saying right in the verse, he says, your insults have no meaning to me. I'm not this body. That was the verse. They have no meaning to me. They're falling up. He said, the difficulty is, I know I'm not this body, but you think you're a king. You know, and he went on to explain that his symptoms of... And then I started speaking on these points. And all of a sudden, I started getting these wonderful realizations. It was almost like Krishna massaging my heart. I just felt like, wow, what's Krishna doing? I just got so many wonderful realizations that I was enlivened. The third class, by the third time they came the next day for Bhagavatam class, I was in complete bliss. And in my heart I was thinking. I was thinking, if Krishna never sent this temple president to do this to me before I gave these verses, I would have never gotten these realizations. Never would have gotten them. How would I get these realizations? I just realized that he was like God sent, as they say. Krishna sent him for me. And I never said anything. And shortly afterwards, when the temple president came back and I would come back from traveling sankta, I noticed that he wasn't insulting me so much anymore. And gradually he just completely stopped. And then I didn't talk about this until about 20 years later. I remembered it. I was instructing my disciples, believe it or not. But I never named the person. I never named the person, never said who it was. I just, you know, I said what happened to me. And immediately, of course, sometimes devotees think, wow, what kind of a temple president is that? He should have been kicked out immediately. I tried to say, no, listen, let me continue the story, you know. I can see all the... So about 20 years later, I started telling the story, and then I told it a few times, and devotees were, you know, enlivened to hear the story. And somehow, the story got back to this person who was the temple president. But I never named him. I never named him. I was... try to use it as an example that how it was beneficial, good, something good was from it. So somehow I got back to him, and I met this devotee, and he, although I never named it, he came up to me and he said, you know, you're a sannyasi now. He said, I'm a householder. He said, I've heard from different places that I was insulting you. And I said, no, I never said, you never mentioned your name at all. I said, just talking about a temple president back in 1975 in Boston. Said, that was me. So immediately he went down to go, I said, no, please, don't. He said, I'm so grateful to you, please. And I picked him up and I embraced him. I said, thank you so much. You've helped me so much. And, you know, that was it. That was it. That's what happened. So, sometimes it's really easy to justify when something happens to ourselves. And we will try to point out, you know, who's the perpetrator? You did something wrong. I'm right. You're wrong. But you don't know what Krishna has in mind for you. And if you're just patient and just try to see what Krishna wants you to learn and see Krishna in it, you can actually begin to transcend duality and see Krishna's hand in everything. Of course, sometimes it's not so easy, and sometimes, because the tendency is to immediately justify. But we have so many examples in Shastra to follow. So many. We can, Haridas Thakur, when he was beaten through 22 marketplaces, he said he deserved it because he didn't give up his life when he heard blasphemy, even though he was in chains and couldn't do anything. And we can find so many examples in Shastra. So we should take shelter of those examples and try to not justify when something. But when it happens, when something happens to herself, but when it happens to another Vaishnava, then just as Parikshit Maharaj was very concerned to protect religious principles, even though another Vaishnava may be very humble because it's happening to himself, still we can do something. If we see something which we feel is a perpetrating an unjust act upon another Vaishnava, but towards ourselves, we should be willing to tolerate. And remember the verse. I did. Taraskrita vipalabdha kshapta kshipta hatahapi tasikat tad pravikurvanti tad bhakta kavayopihi. The devotees of the Lord are so forbearing if even if they're cheated, cursed, neglected, disturbed, or even killed, they're never inclined to avenge themselves. Does that answer your question? I think, yeah. But what should I do? I was suggested that we have kirtan when the deity door is open, and then after the course closed, we can take questions again. Is that all right? That was what was suggested. But I'm open to other suggestions, if there are. What should I do? What did that mean? Kirtan. Is this too difficult for you to listen to? He's my disciple. Well, anyways, the deity doors are going to open in 2 minutes. So let's take a quick question and then we'll... Has someone have a quick question? Yes, okay. Paj Bihari.
Thank you, Maharaj. I wanted to know that I've seen some devotees, you know, they never do fault-finding, they never discuss any of this prajalpa. They're just absorbed in hearing, chanting, and they're very peaceful and happy. Sometimes when I see them, I wonder how I can also get taste for chanting. And, you know, so... Because I've seen that when you chant nicely and hear nicely, then you don't find these topics attractive at all. So how can we get taste for chanting?
I think I quoted the verse the other night. What is that verse? Shushusho shradadanasya vasudeva kataruchi syanmayat sevaya vipra punyatirtana shevan. By serving devotees who are freed from vice, great service is done. By that service, one develops a taste for hearing and chanting. There's also another wonderful verse spoken by, I can't remember, spoken by Haridas Thakur, I think. When Lord Chaitanya came to Rupa Goswami when he was composing the verse, how much nectar there is in the two syllables, Krishna. And Lord Chaitanya asked him, he said, oh, look at this beautiful verse, they look like pearls. Such beautiful, and he asked him to recite the verse for everyone. So he recited the verse, and when he recited the verse, Haridas Thakur went into ecstasy by hearing the verse. And, it was Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami who said that one has to hear about the truth and beauty of the Lord's hearing, the Lord's holy names, by hearing the revealed scriptures from the mouths of Vaishnavas. He says there's no other way which one can actually taste the sweetness of Krishna's name. So one has to hear the glories of the holy name of the Lord from the mouths of Vaishnavas, and by so doing one can develop some taste for chanting. So, of course, that is also serving the Vaishnavas, hearing from them. If we want to get taste, we have to associate with those who have taste. And that's how we get taste, by serving them. Quick? I think thank you.
But when we speak, either in a public forum, in a class, or when we just discuss out various things, without any intention of criticizing, because that was what has been in the mind,
mm-hmm.
it may unconsciously come out,
mm-hmm.
without even our realizing it, but mm-hmm. that message may go to the other person.
Mm-hmm.
Is that criticism, and how do we avoid it if it is?
How to avoid it? Well, we talked about this the other night. Obviously, we have to be cautious. One of the dangers or anarthas is to not know the dangers on the path of devotional service. It's called tattva vibhrama. It's an anartha. So we should know the things that we should avoid. And therefore, if we know the things that we should avoid, then we'll be careful to avoid them. But even if it comes out unknowingly, we say it, then we told the story the other night about Lord Chaitanya's instructions that if after saying something we realize we unknowingly said something and we shouldn't have said it, then the best thing to do is to use the same tongue that one, he gave the example that if one drinks poison, he should counteract the effects of poison by drinking the nectar of immortality. So in the same way, if one unknowingly speaks about another Vaishnava, then he should counteract the effects of unknowingly speaking about that Vaishnava by glorifying the Vaishnava. And that will counteract the effects.
What happens generally is that we speak directly about someone, but philosophically we may indicate certain philosophical points which might indirectly indicate that we are, you know, pointing out to someone. And the other person might take it that way.
If we're discussing philosophy, philosophy is philosophy. Truth has to be spoken. So we'll continue. We'll have kirtan and we'll continue a little bit after kirtan with some more questions. Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Vidada Shivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vinda
Krishna Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Thank you. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Rama. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Ramo Ramo Hare 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 Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Ramo Hare Ramo 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 Hare 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 Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Ah! Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Tulsi Devi ki, Bhakti Devi ki, Sankirtan Yogya ki, Shri Hari Nam Sankirtan ki, Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki, Gaur Premananda. All glories see the assembled devotees. Glories see the assembled devotees. Glories see the assembled devotees. All glories to Shri Shri Guru Nanga. Okay, so we'll take 15 more minutes for questions, okay? Oh, huh? Yeah, I already.
Thanks, Maharaj, for giving your sharing your personal example. Basically, I just want to understand how we can be conscious that whatever good thing is happening in our life is only because of the mercy of devotees and Krishna, and whatever bad thing like provoking situation or any cheating situation or any condemning or criticizing situation is only because of my own karma and I deserve worst. And how to understand that Krishna's hand, that this provoking situation is going to help me for my betterment and for my better spiritual life.
Well, as I answered another devotee last night, it's not a mechanical process. There's no switch you can flip and all of a sudden just say, okay, now I see. It's not intellectual, it's not mechanical. It needs to be cultivated. Prabhupada says, bhakti is a sort of cultivation. And we cultivate that consciousness by practice. That's how we... in due course of time get the realization that we need to sustain us. And just like the points that we're making in this whole presentation is that if we're patient and we continue to practice those things that are within our grasp that we can try to control, and that in due course of time we can become recipients of that mercy which will carry us forward and bring us to the realized stage. So, you're asking, how do I become realized that Krishna is everywhere? And, and see Krishna in everything, which is, of course, an elevated stage of Krishna consciousness. And nonetheless, until we get to that, we have to practice. And although we may falter, the path is very difficult and I am blind and my feet will slip in again and again, yet I'll continue to pray for the saints to give me their mercy stick for my support. As Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that we need extra help. Just like if you're walking up the path and your feet are slipping, if you have an extra stick, you dig into the ground, your 2 feet are slipping, but you have that extra support from the stick, you can move forward without sliding back. So in the same way, you need mercy from the Vaishnavas. And if you continue to associate with Vaishnavas, reveal your mind with confidence and inquire confidentially when you're in difficult situations, that you have a difficult time seeing Krishna, then you'll see that by that effort in of itself, gradually, by making that practice, instead of being impulsive and just assuming that, you know, there's always the perpetrator of suffering, there's always, we see duality. And as long as we're in duality, you know, what is it? Lord Chaitanya said to Sanatana, Dvaite Bhadra Bhadra Gyan Sabha Mano Dhamma E Bala E Manda E Sabha Brahma Brahma Dvaite. He says, in the material world we see things good and bad, but they're all mental concoction. Therefore, to say this is good and this is bad is all a mistake. Alright? So, this is Lord Chaitanya. When Sanatana Goswami said, don't touch me, my body is bad. And Lord Chaitanya said, Dvaite Bhadra Bhadra Gyan. It's Mano Dhamma. Mano Dharma means the religion of the mind. Religion of the mind is to be in duality. This is good, this is bad. So how do we transcend duality? And to see everything in relationship with Krishna. There's a very wonderful verse I oftentimes quote from the 11th canto of the Bhagavatam in this connection, where he stated that although the duality of the material world does not ultimately exist, the conditioned soul sees it as real through the influence of his conditioned intelligence. And he said, but well, if it's your own. He gives the example that just as the conditioned soul may dream of night at something wonderful or something very horrible, or he may daydream during the day of something that he would like or something he would like to avoid, he creates a reality which has no existence beyond his imagination. So therefore, the intelligent person, he has to train the mind to see things, everything connected in Krishna. He has to train. That's the verse actually says he has to train the mind to see everything connected to Krishna. And when the mind is thus trained, then he will become free from all fear. So the verse gives the example of when a conditioned soul dreams of something not very wonderful or something very horrible. It gives a very nice, tangible analogy, because we've all experienced dreams. When you have a very nice dream at night, sometimes we have nice dreams, sometimes we have bad dreams. But when you have a nice dream at night, and then you wake up, you feel sad because it was such a nice dream, and then you realized it was only a dream. But when you have a bad dream at night and you wake up, you're in ecstasy for the same reason. It was only a dream, and then you realize it. So, but we feel happy and we feel sad, but there's no connection to reality. It's only connected to a dream. So he uses this analogy to say that there are night dreams and there are daydreams. We dream at night of something very horrible. We wake up, we're happy. It's only a dream. But what is our happiness? Our happiness is connected to a dream. Well, it's not connected to reality. And our sadness is connected to a good dream, because we realize, oh, it was only a dream. So he says, in the same way we have night dreams and we have day dreams. We dream of something we would like to have. We become very happy in anticipation of something we'd like to have, or we dream of something we would like to avoid. But that's the daydream. So therefore, the verse recommends that we have to transcend duality by training the mind to see everything in relationship with Krishna. And then, when one's mind is so trained, one will become fearless in this world. So it takes training. Like I said, there's no switch that you can immediately flick and then, oh yes. But we have to train it by learning how to see things connected to Krishna. And if we don't practice it, we won't realize it. And sometimes, Krishna will put his devotee through a test, but he never put his devotee through a test that he can't pass. He's very kind, he's very merciful. So we have to learn how to see that Krishna is somehow doing this to me for a reason. And therefore, tatenu kampam susamikshamano bhujana evatma kritam vipakam hidvag vapurbhirvananam namaste jivetiyo mukti pade sadayabhak. One who tolerates these things, sees them as a result of to his old past misdeeds, who goes on glorifying Krishna, engaging in his service and with his body, mind, and words, he becomes mukti pade sadayabhak. He becomes a bona fide candidate for liberation. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, Daya Bhak means it becomes his rightful inheritance. So he says, just like if a person has a rightful inheritance coming to him, in order to get it, the only thing he has to do is live. It will come. So in the same way, if we go on tolerating these things, singing this, doing the karma of our past misdeeds, and go on glorifying Krishna. And Krishna is so kind that He'll give us something so that, for a devotee, so that at least the devotee won't forget Krishna. That's his mercy. That's his kindness. We can always remember Krishna. So, quiet practice. But you have to try. Ananyas chintayanto mam yejana payupashante tesham nitya payuktanam yoga kshema vahamya. If you try meditating on Krishna, then whatever you lack, he'll carry. Whatever you have, he'll preserve. Yes? Oh, did you have a question? I'm sorry. Sheila.
Krishna Maharaj, many times we have seen devotees, they speak about somebody else and they use the phrase, no offenses but.
They speak about somebody else to somebody else,
yes,
and the person is not present.
Yeah, in the absence of a person.
In the absence of the person.
They're discussing. Yeah. I said, no offenses to him but, and then there's a whole download of information.
Yeah. Yeah. What's the question?
First of all, is it, even if the person is really meaning no offenses, is it still the right thing to do? Or
the Prabhupada, ever hear the story Prabhupada says about the thief who says there's nobody in here stealing? No? Prabhupada talks about it in the Bhagavatam, it's in the commentary. There's a thief who's stealing from the house and somebody's coming, the owner's coming, and the thief says, there's nobody in here stealing. Right? So, of course he's in there stealing, but he's saying, oh, there's nobody in here stealing? Why did he say that? Of course he's in there stealing. No offenses, but... I'm not offending, but... I am.
It's not a right practice.
Huh?
It's not a right practice.
If it's not offensive, then it's done in the proper venue. It's done to the right person. It's spoken to the right person. the person who can actually help rectify the situation, then it's not offensive. Intent is right, because you're speaking it to the person who can rectify the situation and who possibly has the kind of relationship with that devotee we're speaking about. Then we don't have to say no offense. He understands. You've come to the right person. But if it's not to the right person, if you say no offense, but there's nobody in here stealing.
Amara, just one last question. Sometimes we're talking about speaking, but speaking is connected to hearing, because when somebody is speaking, somebody is also hearing. So sometimes it becomes like a service for somebody to hear, and when somebody is going to real agony, then they have to sort of download it on somebody else, and they come out with all the garbage. So sometimes it becomes sort of a service just for the person to
hear
relaxed.
All that stuff.
Yeah, to hold the stuff, to hear it, so that the person relaxes and comes to a normal. Otherwise, he's
yes,
like a pressure cooker.
Yes.
So.
So, is
it? You said we should not hear it, because if you can't hear it, you should stop it. You said draw a line if you can't help it. But sometimes you can't help the situation, but still you have to hear. It's a service to the person. You might not be able to help the situation, what he's mentioning about, but it's a service to just hear. And many times it is between husband and wife. So what do we do in this situation practically?
Then you should hear it. And then give the right perspective. Because in anything that happens, there's always something that's for the benefit of the individual, and you should help that person to see. And also, you can also go to the other person and help him to see, or her to see, whichever the case may be, what they may have done to contribute to the problem as well. But each person should learn something. Rather than pointing out the fault, everyone should learn something from what happens. So you should hear. But then don't just say, yes, you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. Of course, unless it's, there are always exceptions to the rules. There may be a case, you're talking to somebody who's coming confidentially to tell you that a woman is being beaten by her husband severely, or had a knife pulled on her or something like that. Then obviously there's just no tolerance for anything like that. And you try to help them under the circumstances. But in general, that's the principle. You should hear, especially if a person is coming to you in confidence, coming to tell you about some difficulties that they're facing, an obstacle they're facing in their spiritual life, and somebody they're perceiving somebody else as a perpetrator. And if your duty is to hear, to help them, you may not be able to help the person, but you can help them by putting things in the proper perspective for them and by hearing from them. Yes, that's okay. But then it's confidential. And is shared only with confidential persons. Yes, we'll have to take a question from the women.
Thank you, Maharaj, for your merciful association. It might be somehow possible to control our speech, but we know that mind is very critical.
Yeah, that's so the next topic. The first is tolerate the urge to speak, and the second is the mind's demands. But unfortunately, I haven't got there yet. But go ahead, continue with your question.
Shilla,
I'm just validating the point that yes, it's true.
Shilla, but Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur says that we have to beat it with broomstick and footwear. So how practical it is?
How practical is it to use a broomstick and a shoe?
How to control the mind? How not to see faults in others? It's very painful.
How not to what?
Not to see faults in others, because it's very painful.
It's very painful to see faults, or very painful to not see faults? I didn't understand.
It's very painful to see faults.
Uh-huh. How to practice? Is that what you said?
How to control mind.
How to control. Well, the mind may do that. Prabhupada says, thinking, feeling, and willing. We may think something, but as long as we just doesn't get past the thinking stage. Thinking, feeling, and then when we actually will it, we start either speaking about it or we may do something else, who knows, physical. The example is given, of course, in the Krishna book. But we don't have to suffer the consequences so much around what we think. It's when it gets past that point and we do something. So certainly we should try to control the mind. And as I've tried to suggest in answer to many questions, that controlling the mind is not the easiest thing to do, and there's no switch. To me, I'll even put the mind in passive mode and to stop all of those things. And therefore, that's why Rupa Goswami uses the word tolerate. We have to tolerate the mind. Matraspashastu konti asitoshna sukadukada agamapaya nichastang titikshasvabharata. Just as happiness and distress comes like the winter and summer seasons, they arise from sense perception. One has to learn to tolerate it without being disturbed. So the mind is going to immediately find an excuse to find fault with somebody. It's just the way the mind works. It's our conditioning. As I was explaining to one devotee last night, every jiva soul has a history. And that history goes back many, many births, not just this life. And every birth, there was exploitation, there was conditioning, and they're carrying all that from one birth to the next. So to get rid of all that conditioning is not something that's going to immediately go away. It's going to be carried over. And we have to learn how to tolerate. Prabhupada said, in fact, I think it's in the Bhagavad Gita, when Prabhupada speaks about the qualities, different qualities, and one of them is tolerance, he says we have to learn to tolerate the minor offenses of others. Isn't it? That's in the 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. It talks about tolerance. He says one devotee has to learn how to tolerate the minor offense. He uses that word tolerate, the minor offenses of others. Just like, you know, you might be in a kirtan and somebody raises their hands real enthusiastically and they hit you in the head. They weren't conscious, you know. Like, so that's a minor offense. You know, they didn't intend it. But you know, we can look at them and hit them back. Look what you're doing, Prabhu. We tolerate the minor offenses of others. So somebody may have, you know, an uncontrollable tongue, and they're trying really hard to control it. You know, and sometimes something comes out, that, you know, it slips out. They're trying to control, they're working really hard. And there's some people that they need a buffer between the mind and the tongue. And they're trying really hard with their intelligence to buffer it, but it just sometimes it just comes out. So just look at their attempts to do it and tolerate, you know. They're trying. And try not to find fault if they're trying. It's when they don't try that it's difficult. So I think it's very appropriate, this word tolerate, to tolerate the minor offenses of others. And that, again, there's no switch. It's practice. It's practice. We have to use our intelligence, and by practicing over due course of time, gradually, we get mercy, and it becomes more natural.
Some devotees, in order to escape this fault finding, make solution to leave the association. So if we go from this association, we won't offend devotees. So is it a solution?
No. It's not the solution. Unless we're not willing to learn by our mistakes. then if we think better to go, it's because Krishna is weeding his garden from offenders. Yes. Yes. Distinction? Distinction means that I want to be recognized for something that I do better than others, even though I don't. But I want it. Like, sometimes devotees want to be recognized for being humble. they're just really artificial. Oh, they try to be so humble, saying, oh, yes, Prabhu. In their hearts, they're thinking that, you know, I know I'm right. Yes, Prabhu. Yeah, you're right, Prabhu. Anything you say, Prabhu. And then as soon as they turn around, he's saying, he's crazy. So, but they want to be recognized as being humble. They want to be I want distinction. I'm a very humble devotee. Just see how humble I was in his presence. That's distinction. I was more humble than he was. Okay. Everyone has one more question, right? Whoever raises their hand the highest, I'll take it as the last question. Oh, that one went up real fast. Okay, last question.
Maharaj, as you mentioned that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that we should glorify the person if you want to avoid fault findings. But then if someone is doing this to me, I mean, he is just glorifying me for the good qualities and he is not at all, I mean, he is neglecting my faults. So how will I improve? I mean, if that person is glorifying me for my good qualities, then I become proud for my good qualities, and I'm just neglecting. I don't know, that is the blind area for me. So how should I improve then?
By immediately glorifying our spiritual master and saying what any qualities you see in me is only due to the mercy of my spiritual master and the mercy of the Vaishnavas. Otherwise, what good qualities would there be in me? We should practice that. Again, practice. We have to give credit where credit is due. And if I have any good qualities, it's only due to the mercy of Vaishnavas. Otherwise, there would be no good qualities whatsoever in me. So we should be willing to give credit where credit is due. Okay. I think we should probably end here. Okay? So we don't go too late. Yeah. Thank you. Hare Krishna. Glory to Srila Prabhupada.
Hare Krishna. So, I'm sure all of us relished this wonderful discourses for the last 3 days. On behalf of Temple, Gaurang Prabhu asked me to profusely thank Maharaj. And if any one of you really feel that Maharaj should come often and have such discourses, in your own way you can say Hari Bol. So we would like to profusely thank Maharaj for nourishing us, you know, with these wonderful discourses. And we hope and pray that, you know, he comes often, as often as possible, on the way to out of India, in India, spends a couple of days here and visits us. So let us profusely thank Maharaj from the bottom of our heart by very, very loudly chanting Hari Bol once again.